Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. We appreciate you tuning in. Today is Sunday, February 17th, 2019. My name is Maddie Love. With me in studio is my good friend and fellow member of Minnesota Skeptics, Rachel Lentz. I totally messed up your name already. Rachel Lentz.
It's okay.
We're excited to be joined by author and podcaster, Fraser Kane. Fraser is the publisher of Universe Today. He co-hosts Astronomy Cast with Dr. Pamela Gay. He is the host of the YouTube series Guide to Space, and he just released a fantastic book, The Universe Today, Ultimate Guide to Viewing the Cosmos, Everything You Need to Know to Become an Amateur Astronomer. This is an open conversation. We welcome and encourage listener interaction with your phone calls to 952-946-6205, your emails to radio at mnatheist.org, or tweet us at atheisttalk. Fraser, thank you so much for waking up early on a Sunday morning.
No problem. I had nowhere else to go. Thanks for having me.
Because it's what, like 7 a.m. where you are?
Yeah. But no, I'm usually up way earlier than this, so this is no problem.
Yeah, I grew up in Western Washington, so I'm still a little jealous every time I hear, because like the area that you're in, because it's like, oh, that's not quite home, but it's close.
Yeah, it's about the same, but not right now. Right now, it's all everything's covered in snow and it's raining. So it's wait for the summer.
No, I'll take it year round. So like,
I guess compared to Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually flipping through your YouTube series, and one of them was Absolute Zero, and I'm like, huh. I think we came close.
Not colder really than Mars.
Yes,
right now,
negative 63. That's like. And that's Fahrenheit, not Celsius. So I didn't convert that.
That's not right.
No. So like, honestly, this is weird. I have had your voice on my earbuds, my car speakers, playing on speakers at work for like, I don't know, over 10 years. It, like, because I came in around like episode 40.
And, whoa.
Well, yeah, because you just did what, episode
classic.
518?
Yeah, we're in the 500s now.
Yeah. So like, before we delve into your book, I really just wanted to say thank you for like sharing so much knowledge over the years.
No problem. Happy to do it.
And I appreciate that. So the title of your book, The Universe Today, Ultimate Guide to Viewing the Cosmos, Everything You Need to Know to Become an Amateur Astronomer. When somebody goes to the bookstore or buys this online, like what can a reader expect to find when they crack open this beautiful hardcover like book that it's like sitting in front of me and I'm already enjoying.
I describe it. I mean, what it looks like sort of like a Dungeons and Dragons book, except it's a little bit shorter, right? So it's like it's the Dungeon Master's Guide to Space. But the goal with this book was to like people want to get into astronomy, but there's all these questions, right? It feels like there's these big hurdles. What gear do you get? Where do you look? What should you be looking for? And how can you take the kinds of pictures that you see on Astronomy Picture of the Day and things like that? And so our goal is to take a person from zero through all the terminology, through all of the different kinds of gear, to picking what they're going to want, to what kinds of objects to look at in the night sky, and then even how you can use a lot of the more modern tools with the internet to be able to find out when the International Space Station is going to be flying overhead, or how to find out when there's aurora activity going on, or how to chase meteor showers, and then interesting projects that you can do, how to build your own telescope, backyard observatory, and even get involved in some science.
So there's a couple names on this book besides yours. There's a foreword by maybe my favorite astronomer, Dr. Pamela Gay.
Yeah.
And this guy named David Dickinson that I've never heard of, but now I have. Can you tell us a bit more about like how these voices came about and how the book came about?
Yeah, well, Pamela wrote the foreword, and of course, she's my co-host on Astronomy Cast and my favorite astronomer as well. So, professional astronomer, and so she was gracious enough to help bring people in the beginning of the book. Dave Dickinson is our covers the amateur astronomy beat on Universe Today, which is the website that I publish. And so every week, Dave usually writes one, two articles about things you can see in the night sky, comets that are coming by, interesting occultations, how to get the most out of the lunar eclipse, things like that. And a couple of years ago, Dave started to write everything that you're going to be able to see this year articles, like highlights for 2016, highlights for 2017. And then in 2000 and at the end of 2017, we tried writing a sort of an online book, an ebook of everything that would be out for 2018, I think. Maybe it was 2017. I forget exactly when we did this and when it turned into a real book. And that was really well received. And so we pitched the idea of doing like an actual proper book to a publisher, and they liked it. And so that came out about 4 months ago was the actual book. So Dave Dickinson is just like, all he writes about is amateur astronomy. So he was the perfect guy to work on the book with.
Seems like it.
Yeah. So I have an 8-inch Dob, and I love showing folks the night sky. I always get questions like from people I run into, like especially when I'm doing beginner special interest group stuff, and like, you know, like, where do I start? And I used to say, you know, grab Turn Left at Orion. It's still an amazing book. It's a good reference material. But your book has supplanted that now as my first recommendation. But what books did like a young Fraser Cain use to start navigating around the night sky? Because you've been doing this for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when I was a teenager, I my book was called Night Watch, was the one that I used to get into, and by Terence Dickinson. And it's a fantastic book. I still really love it. And it had really nice star charts and lists of things that I could see over the course of the seasons. And so I used that book and sort of burned through it with my telescope to find as many of the objects. And it's funny. I mean, a lot of my knowledge about astronomy is the stuff like just what to see in the night sky. I learned that stuff when I was a teenager. And still, I mean, I go outside and I look up at the stars. And it's not just a bunch of stars. I mean, I recognize all my constellations. I know where all of the various objects that you can see in a small telescope are. It's a very familiar place to me whenever I go outside and look up. And it's amazing how that can happen, you know, that you can, with a little bit of time, a little bit of just going out and with intention going, okay, I'm going to find, you know, I know that these constellations are up tonight. Now I'm going to find them. Oh, that's Andromeda. That's Orion. That's Aries. You start to learn all of their positions, and then they are the larger milestones for the smaller objects, where the Andromeda galaxy is, where the Great Globular Cluster in Hercules, the Orion Nebula, and so on. And that knowledge never goes away. And now you become that person who, you know, when you're out with a bunch of friends and Orion is up, or you can point that out to your friends and go, oh, there's the North Star, right?
Right.
And I think that – and it's great because it never leaves you, right? Once you learn it, then it's there forever.
Yeah, I actually haven't been out, unfortunately, like with my telescope in like almost a year. But I'll still, like, when I pick up night shifts at work, I'll go outside on a break. And it's like, I can just stare at the sky. And I still remember, like, I still know where all of this stuff is.
Yeah.
If I had a scope, I could still just find it.
Yeah. And that 8-inch telescope is perfect. It's like the kind of telescope that I recommend to everybody pick up first. Because you, with almost no sort of, there's no hassle. You just take the thing. There's Saturn. You grab the front of the telescope. Turn it over and point at Saturn, look through the eyepiece, and with an 8-inch Dobsonian, it's a perfect view of Saturn and Jupiter and Mars and the moon and some of those brighter objects that you can see in the night sky. It's a great telescope. I you know, if anyone asks me which telescope do I start with, you own it already.
So like, and when you're looking, I guess, so my first telescope unfortunately wasn't that one. It was a 3-inch department store reflector telescope.
Oh, yeah.
It was on an unstable tripod. The eyepiece maybe had a field of view I could maybe see the whole moon in. But, like, I made it work. And I remember this, like, the Christmas night I had it. I was like, in my mid-20s. That's how old I was. But, like, I'm going outside, and I finally found Saturn. And I was just like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of my favorite experiences is to take the telescope, point it at Saturn, and show a person who's never seen it before, because it just blows their mind. Because you can see it, like it's there, and you can see sort of the atmospheric turbulence, and so it feels very present. And yet you can absolutely see that ring. You can see with an 8-inch, you can see those gaps in the rings. and some of its brighter moons. It's an amazing experience.
Yeah, the group that Rachel and I are part of, Minnesota Skeptics, we took a field trip to one of the observatories owned by the Minnesota Astronomical Society. And I bring my granddaughter with. She's like 13 or 14 at the time. And she's looking through the big refractor at Saturn. And she's like looking back at me asking like, did you guys put a sticker on this?
Yeah, I know. We get that too. It's like, is this real? Is this, am I looking at a screen? What? No. Like this is, you are seeing what Galileo saw.
Yeah.
That's so mind-blowing to me. That was my first experience also. With really astronomy in general, I was in like eighth grade, I want to say, and we took a school field trip at night to one of the local parks, and we looked up, and it was focused on Saturn. And I think the thing for me was seeing the shadow of the rings on Saturn itself. And it was just like, for some reason, that particular aspect of it was really what solidified my love of space at that time.
Yeah. And right now, I mean, last summer was the best planetary year we've had in a while. This summer will be good too. You know, Mars was at its closest point, and so Mars was really bright. Jupiter was great. Saturn was great. You could see all of them at the same time. There was a few nights you could see all the planets at the same time. They were all up. Mercury, Venus, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars were all visible.
That is so awesome. We are actually just need to run into our first commercial break. So I hope you can stick around with us for about 2.5 minutes. All right. So please stay with us for the break. Rachel Ann will return to Atheist Talk with Fraser Cain discussing his book, The Universe Today, The Ultimate Guide to Viewing the Cosmos. You're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
I'm Candy Broffel, publisher of the Twin Cities edition of Natural Awakenings magazine and host of Green Tea Conversations, a new show for people who are on a journey to take responsibility for their health and play a more active role in their family's well-being. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I interview local experts who share the latest in natural holistic approaches in a fun and informative way. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio. News flash about my show. It's now an hour long, running from 7 to 8 a.m. every Monday. The longer time slot will allow for interviews of idealists doing important work in the world. Ellie 2.0 Radio. Listen every Monday from 7 to 8 a.m. My show, it's engaging and real, and it's on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Native Roots Radio is proud to announce we've added an extra hour.
Yeah, Chuske, 1 hour goes by too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
I'll have extra time to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national and native news from all over the country and Canada.
This new hour is sponsored by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, rewriting the odds for their clients for over 80 years.
We are awake.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe, and I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and Francine Dinah. If you've never been to Cucumbers, it's a buffet-style restaurant with a huge variety of salads, homemade soups, bakery items, and hot entrees that change daily and nightly. Plus, our always fresh fruit and delicious ice cream. We're open for lunch and dinner, but Sunday brunch is my favorite time at Cucumbers. With scrambled eggs, waffles, French toast, bacon, sausage, baked ham, chicken fajitas, brunch potatoes, warm gooey cinnamon rolls, and many other items to choose from, it's no wonder why Cucumbers has always been a popular Sunday destination. So whether you're looking to skip Mass, someplace to go after Mass, or just great food to maintain your Mass, Cucumbers is the answer to your prayers. Bring in your church bulletin or Minnesota Atheist newsletter and receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Thank you.
Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're tuned in Atheist Talk. I'm your host, Maddie Love, joined in studio by Rachel Lenz. And in just a moment, we'll return to Fraser Kane, co-host of Astronomy Cast and publisher of Universe Today, who has just released a new book, The Universe Today, Ultimate Guide to Viewing the Cosmos, everything you need to know to become an amateur astronomer. Maybe you've already picked up this book, and now, after doing some online shopping or walking through Barnes & Noble, you're hungry and need a place to sit and thoroughly enjoy Fraser's book. Might I recommend Cucumbers in a restaurant in Edina, Minnesota? You see, Atheist Talk is produced with funding from Minnesota Atheist and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina. And Cucumbers is a great place to enjoy a buffet so expansive you'll be reminded of the Virgo cluster. Yeah, that one took a while. Don't read. That was a terrible joke. So anyway, please consider visiting our sponsors. And if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. And if you'd like to advertise in this program and help keep us on the air, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. And now, back to Fraser Kane. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, you can call us at 952-946-6205, email us at radio@mnatheist.org, or tweet us at Atheist Talk. Rachel, on to you.
So, Fraser, I just wanted to thank you, like Maddie had thanked you earlier, for doing this for so long and so thoroughly. Just communicating about space, and specifically with Astronomy Cast, your work with Dr. Pamela Gay. I was initially inspired by the universe back in middle school, but I sort of fell off the wagon a little bit in the throes of life, as you know, you grow up in teenagehood and everything into early adulthood. But I actually was re-inspired to learn more about the universe as we know it because of your podcast. Because of Astronomy Cast, and it actually led to me being able to talk. I met this wonderful man at a Minnesota Skeptics event, and we were able to talk for about 8 hours about space, and he is now my husband.
Nice work. So we are responsible for your marriage.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. In a way, yeah. So thank you.
It was written in the stars.
I'll take it. That's great. You're welcome.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
So I actually have a few questions. I guess one of the first ones I'm curious about is, how do you and Pamela decide on what to talk about for Astronomy Cast?
There's two ways we go. One is I send her, I have a list of topic ideas, and whenever the bucket starts to get low, I just brainstorm another 50. And so there's a great big list of topics that she gets to choose from. And she is, you can sort of see some of them she's not that interested in talking about. So they've been there for a couple of years. Others she gets into right away. That's the sort of the main way that we get topics. And then the other way is she comes up with some idea and she throws them in there. And you can often tell which one is which because mine are very utilitarian. So mine will be a topic like fast radio bursts, and Pamela's will be something like the day the universe tried to declare war on us. Right. And because she's got some really interesting piece of space history that she's trying to, you know, that she's just discovered and wants to communicate it. And so we'll go down that pathway. But and it's, you know, a lot of it is, it's very easy. The job is very easy for me, right? Because all I have to do is just ask a bunch of questions and just be curious and follow my, you know, the path wherever it goes. For Pamela, it's a lot harder because she has to know everything and answer everything. And so a lot of the times it, you know, which topics we're choosing depends on how deeply this stuff is in her wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. And I'm amazed at how much knowledge she has then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's bottomless.
Well, it was weird. Like, it took me a few episodes to realize that, like, Fraser knew more than he was letting on when he was asking questions. It's like, yeah, Fraser knows what he's talking about too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, my job is to wrangle her, right? That to be the interested amateur who wants to know more, and to stop her when. And try to re-explain what she said, or to follow the path, or to ask the question, the obvious question. And I think that's where I really enjoy is when people say, and Fraser just asks the question that I would have wanted to ask, right? Which is like, she'll explain something, but she'll miss some part, or some part will be obvious to an astronomer. But for me, I'll be like, wait a minute, what? How does this work? And I will follow up with additional questions. And as I learn more, that gets harder, because I start to fall into that same trap of like, oh, well, you know, this is obvious. Everyone knows this, but everyone doesn't. And so it's funny, as I've gained my education through AstronomyCast, I have to work harder and so to remember and make sure that I get her to cover the material, so that a person who is new to this topic can feel like they've brought themselves up to speed. And so that's my job, is to produce live as we do the show.
Sure. That actually is a good segue to my next question, because I'm curious, how do you ensure that the science you're looking at, whether in AstronomyCast or anywhere in Universe Today or any of your other creative outlets, how do you ensure that it gets communicated both accurately and clearly, but still is understandable to a lay audience?
Well, that's the magic, right? I mean, that's the thing that's taken me 20 years of science reporting to, I hope, be good at, that you – and you can see this. Like, a lot of people try to communicate stuff in science, especially people who maybe it's not their main job. They're a reporter for CNN or whatever, but they're also having to cover a piece of space news, and they will get a lot of the science wrong because mm-hmm. they just don't know all the details. And so you have to work, you know, I have been working on those two things simultaneously for 20 years. How do I make things, how can I take a very complicated topic and explain it in a way that a person understands deeply what is the news? What is the new thing that has been added to the scientific knowledge? And at the same time, not make a single scientific mistake through the entire thing that I am creating, right?
Yeah.
And that is – and both of those are a challenge. And how do you – you know, from the explaining part, that's just practice. I mean, we have whatever, 25,000 stories on Universe Today now over the time that I've been doing this, you know, not just written by me, but all of our writing team. So, you know, we just do the same thing again and again and again, and eventually you – create patterns of ways to explain this stuff. And then the scientific accuracy, again, that is practice. And that is you learning every time. Like, every time I say a thing, there's a little subroutine in my brain that says, is that thing scientifically correct? Mm-hmm. And I know what I know for sure. And then I also know the stuff that I am uncertain on. And for that uncertain stuff, I have ways of making sure that I am sure. And so I will double check, and I'll check the original papers, and I'll go to various original sources and just make sure that that the number that I'm saying is correct, or the way that I'm describing a thing is correct. And then you learn from your audience. I mean, one of the really great things about doing this stuff on, say, YouTube is the commenters. I know for everybody else, YouTube comments are this terrible wasteland of hate and filth, but my comments are great. And whenever I make a mistake, I'm able to incorporate that lesson back into all future explaining. And I find now I don't make a lot.
Gonna have to cut you off. We're about to go into a break. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Please stay with us. I'm Matt Love in studio with Rachel Lenz, and you're listening to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of the Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show, your source for elder care and caregiver solutions, inviting you to listen to our live call-in show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding elder care and caregiver issues to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your best quality of life. Please join us this Saturday from noon to 1 for the Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show, and learn more about us at minnesotahospice.com.
My name is Lola Silvestri, and I'm going to be 95 this year. I spend a lot of time in my backyard. I feed the birds and the bees. I love my flowers. The color in my garden keeps the pink in my cheeks. I was very independent and thought I could take care of myself. I fell and I had to have Meals on Wheels. I love them. They're my savior. And I look forward to volunteers because they've all become my friends.
It's Meals on Wheels.
America, let's do lunch.
1 in 6 seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Atheists, secular humanists, and free thinkers. Here you are listening to the Minnesota Atheists Talk Radio Show, Atheist Talk. We hope you are enjoying it. If having a frankly atheist perspective on the radio waves appeals to you, please consider making a contribution to our radio fund. Our contract came up for renewal, and we need your help if you want the program to stay on the air. That will make sure that you can continue to have opportunities to hear interesting speakers with non-religious perspectives, and you can call up and ask them questions too. Get the details on our website at minnesotaatheists.org, where you will find buttons to make it easy to make a secure donation through PayPal. Or, if you have a business and would like to reach an intelligent, progressive audience, please contact us through our website. That's minnesotaatheists.org. Or call us at 612-588-7031. If you are interested in us, we are interested in you.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today, snow likely before noon with a high of 22, and tonight, a low around 8. Monday will be mostly cloudy with a high near 18 and a low around negative 2. Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 13. AM 950 is brought to you by Eat Local Minnesota. Break away from the usual and find a list of one-of-a-kind local restaurants at eatlocalminnesota.com. From elegant to casual, exotic to comfort food, they've got everything and more. Find the full list of incredible nearby restaurants at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Maddie Love, in studio with Rachel Lenz, chatting with Fraser Cain, co-host of Astronomy Cast, publisher of Universe Today, who has a brand new book, The Universe Today, Ultimate Guide to Viewing the Cosmos, everything you need to know to become an amateur astronomer. That's a long title. If you'd like to chat with us this morning, you can call us at 952-946-6205, email us at radio@mnatheist.org, or tweet us at Atheist Talk. Before we continue with our conversation with Fraser, I want to thank our group of dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of you, our listeners. You help keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast form. This week, we'd like to thank our special donor of the week, Cindy. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page or our Patreon, where you can get extended interviews at patreon.com/atheisttalk. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. We couldn't do this show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. Music for Atheist Talk is by composer and member Brent Michael David and is used with permission. Please note all opinions are of the guests and hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the Minnesota Atheist Organization. All right, mischief managed. Let's get back to Fraser Cain talking all things astronomy like his book. And Fraser, right before the break, I cut you off, unfortunately. Did you want to talk again about scientifically accurate YouTube comments, which to me seems like an oxymoronic statement to begin with, but I have a feeling when they're your comments, they maybe have a little bit more weight.
Yeah, no, like I said, my commenters are great and they slap my wrist whenever I make the smallest mistake, and I'm able to incorporate their advice and corrections, and it just makes me better. That was the end.
Oh, okay. Oh, I could have maybe.
So in other words, I really enjoy, and I'm glad that I have YouTube comments. I know I'm the only person, I think, on YouTube who says this, but I really enjoy the comments on my YouTube videos.
So I have a question from one of our other members of Minnesota Skeptics who is listening, who texted me in. And he was wondering if you could explain the difference between the Hubble telescope and the James Webb Space Telescope.
Sure. Right. So the Hubble Space Telescope, this is the one that was launched back in the 90s and has been going strong for decades and decades. And Hubble is a 2.6 meter optical telescope. What it really can do is it views – it's kind of like your telescope, right, except it's 2.6 meters across. And it views from the near-infrared view through the visible light spectrum into the ultraviolet. And so when you imagine the whole electromagnetic spectrum, right, there's radio waves and microwaves and infrared on one side, then you've got the visible spectrum, and then you've got ultraviolet, and then you've got X-rays, and you've got gamma rays. So Hubble is right in the middle, working like a regular telescope that we're familiar with here on Earth. James Webb is much, much bigger. I think it's 6.5 meters across. So it's like you take, you know, if you look at it, it looks almost like someone built a grid of Hubble Space Telescopes. It's a huge, huge instrument with this great big sun shield. But the trick with James Webb is it is a far infrared telescope. So it views a completely different wavelength of light than the Hubble Space Telescope does. It's looking for heat. In fact, it's looking for heat that is very close to zero, to absolute zero. So it's looking for some of the sort of the lowest temperatures that you can get out there. And the telescope has this sun shield that blocks the light from the sun. It has coolers on board designed to keep its temperature down, allowing it to be able to distinguish those cold temperatures. And what those are good for is when we think about the expansion of the universe, right, all of the parts of the universe are moving away from us at these tremendous velocities. And as you get farther and farther away, the cosmic microwave background, which is the afterglow left over from the Big Bang, is the farthest that we can see. And this is where light has shifted to the microwave. So if you want to see stuff that's not quite as that far, the first galaxies that were forming, you want to look in this far infrared spectrum. And this is what this is what James Webb is going to be able to do. It's also going to be able to look at other cool objects. And another example of this are planets that are orbiting other stars. So a planet is only going to be, you know, is going to be relatively cool compared to the brightness of a star. And Hubble can't really be able to see these, but James Webb will have the capability to be able to see newly forming planets. The other thing is that this wavelength allows you to peer through gas and dust. And so James Webb is going to be able to see through the dust that surrounds newly forming planetary systems and watch these planets as they're forming out of their solar nebulae. So it's a big question, right? How did the universe come together? How did these first galaxies form? How did it form into the structures that we see today? And of course, the other big question is, how do planetary systems come together? And these are the questions that James Webb is designed to ask. But unfortunately, it's not going to be able to do the same kind of thing that Hubble can do, to be able to see these visible light spectrum, to be able to see into the ultraviolet. And so we need another monster telescope to follow with Hubble if we want to keep that work going.
Are there plans for that?
There are, yeah. There's an amazing telescope that's in the design stages right now called the LUVOIR. It's the Large Ultraviolet Optical Infrared Telescope. And so it will be following the same spectra that Hubble does, but it's going to be just an enormous telescope. The plans are somewhere between a 15 to an 18 meter telescope. So it will be so much bigger, right? So bigger. When you think about it, the biggest telescope on Earth is a little over 10 meters across. So this would be a telescope that is almost twice as big as the biggest Earth-based telescope today, but in space, like Hubble. And that is, and in theory, that should launch in the 2035s. Right now, NASA is working on their decadal survey, where they pick all of the instruments that, you know, all their science plans over the next decade. And then that defines the missions that they're going to work on. And this is one of them.
Wow.
I'm just thinking, the James Webb Space Telescope hasn't launched yet. But wasn't it supposed to have launched by now?
Yeah. The James Webb should have launched several years ago for about a quarter of its current budget. So it is vastly over budget and it is very late. Right now, I think we're looking at 2021, and it just passed a new shake test. So they were able to test that it can handle the rigors of the launch. And this time, a bunch of washers and bolts didn't show up on the ground after the shake test. So
good.
I think they think it's ready, but it still has to be put on a ship, carried down through the Panama Canal to the launch site in South America, the European Space Agency's launch site, bolted to the top of an Ariane 5 rocket and blasted off into space, has to make its way to the L2 Lagrange point and deploy. So there's a lot of steps. The joke that I always make is sometime around the year 3000, but no, I think we're about 2 years away from James Webb going up, we hope.
Oh, and good. For anybody listening, if you're curious what an L2 Lagrange point is or why a telescope in space works better than a telescope on the planet Earth and the atmospheric effects, you should probably listen to Astronomy Cast.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, we talk about all this stuff. Although we haven't done an episode on James Webb. Pamela has a you know, she doesn't want to talk about spacecraft until they launch, until they're safely in space. On my guide to space, I talk about these things all the time because I love future telescopes. But Pamela, you know, she doesn't want to jinx it. So she wants to make sure that she waits until these things are actually launched and doing some science before we do a topic on them.
Yeah, I should have known about your YouTube channel, Guide to Space. I know I've heard about it a lot, you know, from just reading Universe Today, and I know you've probably mentioned it on Astronomy Cast, but I, for the life of me, last night was the first night I ever like sat down to look at it. It was like 390 videos, and then I just started watching.
like, yeah, it's a rabbit hole. Yeah.
Next thing, it's 3 in the morning, and you're still going, keeping your eyes open.
No, it was one. Yeah. It was one.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But that was
well.
So
you're well
good.
Prepared for the interview.
Well, I just liked how it reminded me of Astronomy Cast and your book in the way that like it was able to take like factoids and like talk about them enough to like a layperson, but at the same time be interest enough to somebody who had a modicum of knowledge about astronomy, and just really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're great.
I actually have another question that my husband wanted me to ask. You had mentioned that that a lot of science communication from journalists that maybe aren't steeped in science get a lot of the facts wrong. Can you recommend any news sources, science-focused websites or news sources for other people? I mean, obviously there's Universe Today, right? But other places where people can also get more scientifically accurate news?
Well, I mean, my knowledge is in the space realm. Mm-hmm. So the sites that I really respect that I know about, right, are sites like NASA Spaceflight is a really good one. I really like the coverage from Ars Technica. They have a really good science reporting, and all the people there are quite knowledgeable. And then you can still trust things like Scientific American. Phil Plait is doing a column. Is he over at Sci-Fi now? So I think that, but it is harder and harder to find really good, dependable science reporting. And I don't follow a lot of the other kinds of science, right? Mm-hmm. The biology and the climate science and things like that. So unfortunately, I can't really tell you.
No, that's, we're talking about space, so that's great.
Yeah, I mean, but I think what's great is that you can follow all this stuff back to the source. Mm-hmm. That NASA, for example, is probably the best reporting of NASA news. They have a great public relations team. Their press releases are scientifically accurate. And many times when you're seeing stories about NASA stuff, it's just people regurgitating NASA news, NASA press releases. And they produce amazing videos and they do great podcasts. Maybe podcasting, there's a lot of better sources. It's interesting to me. Yeah, it's pretty tough, I think, right now. It's a tough time to be in the news publishing game.
Yeah.
There's a few that seem to have pulled it off. Things like, I don't know, the Huffington Post and BuzzFeed, although they all laid off a bunch of people. So I think for a lot of the traditional media, they're all hemorrhaging money, and there are probably other small publishers like me. You know, like Universe Today is still the same size that it always has been, which is me working at my kitchen table or me working at my desk, right, with freelance writers.
Okay.
And I think that's a sustainable model, but I don't know about what else is going on out there. It's a bit of a bloodbath.
So we have just a minute left before our very last commercial break. And when we come back, I wanted to talk to you about like your journey to atheism. And also I wanted to ask you a little bit about flat earthers because like it seems to like be growing. I don't want to say popularity, but yeah, unpopularity as far as I'm concerned.
Growing unpopularity. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way to describe it.
All right. So please stay with us for the break. You'll return to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, Gregory Rich, founder and chief at Habitation Furnishing and Design, and now I'd like to invite you to kill your Sunday evenings with me right here on AM 950 with Drink in the Style. It's a 1 hour long conversation about interior design, art, architecture, and pretty much anything else, visual and aesthetic, all while enjoying some booze handcrafted by our friends at Gianni's Steakhouse in downtown Wayzata. Can you think of a better way to spend Sunday evenings? Drink in the Style, Sundays, 5 p.m.
Connections Radio Show is all about tapping into our hardwired hunger to connect. We examine meaningful connections to ourselves, our community, and the world around us. By opening the door to innovative insights by a wide variety of interesting guests, we'll make the connections to something bigger than ourselves. Join me, Lori Fitz, your host of Connections Radio Show, and together we'll make the connections. Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe. I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and France in Edina. Many who have dined at Cucumbers are of the opinion that our buffet has evolved from an older, more country-style buffet. They look at our 50-foot salad bar and can imagine a smaller ancestor with far fewer choices. An ancestor that didn't offer as many hot selections or have a bakery with fresh baked muffins and breads. Didn't offer homemade soups and lacked the fresh fruit and ice cream bar that Cucumbers customers have grown to love. But some will say, where are the transitional buffets? In addition, they look at everything that we offer and say that Cucumbers is irreducibly complex. If you were to move just one of our offerings, the entire buffet wouldn't function. Well, I would like to think that Cucumbers was intelligently designed, since I helped design it. But at the same time, it truly is an evolutionary step up the buffet ladder. And as always, if you bring in your atheist newsletter or church bulletin, you will receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
I've never met another atheist.
Sure you have. Non-believers make up 12% of the population.
Then where are they?
You can meet us at book clubs, pub crawls, discussion groups, movie nights, monthly meetings.
Okay, I get it. How am I going to keep track of all this?
Easy. Sign up for Minnesota Atheist Meetup Group and subscribe to AWE.
What's a meetup group?
Meetup is an online networking site that helps people build communities. We have over 700 members with at least two events every week.
And what is AWE?
It stands for Atheist Weekly Email. It comes out every Friday and lists everything that's going on.
How do I sign up?
Go to the Minnesota Atheists website, minnesotaatheists.org. On the left, click on the words Get Awe-Inspired.
And for the meetup?
Look for the red meetup badge on the right. Above it are the words, click here to check out the meetup group.
I'm sold. Minnesota Atheists, Meetup, and AWE. What's that website again?
MinnesotaAtheists.org.
Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're tuned into Atheist Talk. I'm your host, Maddie Love, and joined in studio by Rachel Lenz. And on Skype is my favorite science podcaster, the co-host of Astronomy Cast, the publisher of Universe Today, who has just released a new book, The Universe Today, Ultimate Guide to Viewing the Cosmos, Everything You Need to Know to Become an Amateur Astronomer. Thanks for sticking around, Frazier.
No problem.
So going into the break.
This is going to be the good part, right?
Yes. So we have like 8 minutes left. And then unfortunately, I won't have you on the air anymore. It's going to be kind of sad for us, but you know.
I'll come back anytime you need.
I will probably hold you to that.
Sure, no problem. You know how to book time in my calendar.
Oh, you just...
Even with your weird 7 a.m. schedule, but yeah.
Oh, my God.
On Sunday.
I was actually booking another guest who's over on the West Coast. He's a food historian. And he was like, I can't go on it. That's 7 a.m. It's California. I can't be on. I was like, okay. Well, we'll figure something out. And at the same time, I was like, but Fraser's going to be on?
Yeah.
And we had Shelley Segal on, and she was calling from Australia. So
that's the downside of living on a spherical Earth is that yes. we have to experience different time zones.
Nice segue.
Or do we?
Oh, so you know, I don't honestly understand why anybody thinks the Earth is flat, and I know that there are people that are probably just you know making it up, but they really don't believe the Earth is flat. But I know there's a lot of people that really do. And I don't think they're stupid. They're just – could you help me understand this or are you having this problem understanding it too?
I'm kind of tired of trying to understand it. And so I don't really – I mean I think that there is a lot of it is trolling. And I think a lot of it is people are trying to make people believe it. And they don't actually believe it because it's almost like you need to be really sophisticated about how you – ignore evidence to be able to try and make this case. So I don't think you can really minimize the amount of trolling and people just having a laugh that's actually going on.
I think that's fair, but there's a great podcast called Oh No with Ross and Carrie, and they go and talk to kind of like the John Ronson group book Them. They go and talk to people who have different you know beliefs or worldviews, and they actually went and talked to a Flat Earth Society. I don't know if it was the Flat Earth Society, but a group of flat earthers in California, and they were up front. They weren't like lying to them about mm-hmm. the fact that they believe the Earth is round, but they were like, these people, at least at this group, they're true believers.
Right. And so, I think the other part is that there is a large religious component to it. So I think that I see a lot, you know, for the YouTube comments that I don't like, a lot of them are this mix of flat earth and religious dogma that are mashed together into this hate screed that are thrown at me. And so it's the weirdest thing, but I will get these comments from people that are very mean and also very sort of superior acting, right? And they'll say like, what an idiot, you know, doesn't understand about the flat earth or blah, 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 you know, look it up, dummies, you know, that kind of thing. I'm like, oh, I'm convinced. So I think there is like this idea that there's a firmament. And so I think that a lot of the fuel is this rejection of science and an attempt to bolster religious arguments for the universe. And the same thing that goes on with, say, evolution versus creationism, that the creationists do definitely have an agenda, which is that they're trying to minimize the impact that atheism is going to have to religion. And I think that is – and obviously we know that's a losing battle, right? You can't battle evolution. The evidence is overwhelming. You know, the bacteria is evolving to make you sick right now. And so I think that – and to battle your antibiotics. And it feels like there's a lot of that as well, that there is this – they often seem very intertwined. And so that's – and then I think that when people present these arguments, you've got to decide – if you're having an argument with a person who is willing to listen to evidence, because if they're not, right, then the argument is over. Mm-hmm. And so often what I do is a person comes onto my channel and goes, hey, you dummies, you don't understand, blah, 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 flat earth, research it. You know, there's a firmament and there's no such thing and blah, blah, blah. And I just ban them because I'm not interested in having a conversation with them. Like, they're mean. You know, they're right out of the gate, they insulted me. And they are clearly, they're not going to have an argument they're not willing to accept evidence. So what's the point, right? What is the point of having a conversation with a person who's like, show me some evidence that we live in a round world? You're like, here's a piece of evidence. Like, I don't believe in evidence. Like, okay. Well, then we are finished. And get out of my house because you're being a jerk. And what's nice is I get to have that. And as I do this more, I'm less interested in having these hopeless conversations with people, right? Either you're ready to have a conversation about evidence or you're not. And if you're not, then come back when you are. And if, when you want to have an actual conversation about evidence, then it's on. But until then. And so that's that first. So I do find people that are on the fence where people have said things to them that have them a bit confused, and I can clear them up for them. But I find that's actually more rare.
All right. So I only have 2.5 minutes left, which is the longest I've ever waited to ask a guest about how they became an atheist or anything about being an atheist. Because to be honest, until we were doing prep work for this show today, I didn't know you were an atheist.
I mean, I think isn't that sort of the default for most people in the science communicating world? But my journey to atheist, I was really lucky. I was born atheist. So both my parents were atheists. And so church religion wasn't something that ever existed in my household. Where I come from, I didn't know anyone who was religious. Right, where I live in Canada, on the west coast of Canada, on a small hippie island, there was a church, I think, and I knew one family that went to it, but apart from that, religion played no part in anybody's lives on where I grew up, and living in Vancouver, so none of my friends are religious, none of my friends' parents were religious that I knew of. And so for me, atheism is the natural state.
Wow.
And
so different
and it's
than
just carried through. Yeah. And I've become a born again atheist in that once I started to understand the skeptic movement and the need for evidence for things, then it was able to reinforce my lack of belief.
Yeah, it's so different. I mean, we're a pretty progressive state in Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah.
But nonetheless, it's still like you can't throw a rock or swing a dead cat. Not that you swing cats.
My wife is from Texas and now lives here in Canada. And for her, it's just night and day, right? Yeah. She's like, nobody asks me where I go to church and nobody cares. Nobody wants to know that it never comes up. And yet there where she comes from, religion is such a big part of their everyday life, of everything they do. And here it just doesn't exist. And so she came to her, I have so much respect for her because she came to her atheism in a
Fraser, environment. I have to let you go. I have to let you go. The show is over. Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk. We'd love for you to join us again next Sunday when we have Mandisa Thomas, founder and president of Black Nonbelievers, who will be sitting here in this very studio. You're listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Stand up, stand up. You've been sitting way too long.
Hello, this is Ralph Nader, host of the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.